I am so glad you could join us. I'm your host, Mo Gaudat. This podcast is nothing more than a conversation between two good friends sharing inspiring life stories and perhaps some nuggets of wisdom along the way. This is your invitation to slow down with us. Welcome to Slow Mo. Welcome back. Today, we are still part of the mini-series on Unstressable. We can now have paper versions of it in our hands. Everyone will have a paper version of it in their hands by end of April in the US and 9th of May in the UK and International English. Very excited. So far, we've really been going on plan. A little stressful, but we're Unstressables. Today's conversation is about a very important part of being unstressed. A very personal conversation for me, to be quite honest, because I suck at it. Our guest today, when I say our, it's a joint podcast between me and Alice, my co-author on Unstressable, who is also the host of the Unstressable podcast. Our guest today is Stuart Sandeman, who wrote Breathe In, Breathe Out, a Sunday Times bestseller. He is the host of the BBC One radio show. What was it?
The decompression sessions.
The decompression sessions. And he really found out about the value of breathing to de-stress, to deal with difficult times through probably the most difficult, stressful experience you can have. Similar to Alice and myself, he found himself hit by life in a way that is quite a stressful challenge. And breathing helped him out of it. I think we should probably leave Stuart to talk about that, not me. In any case, the reminder is that this mini-series is to ask you to support our mission of getting 1 million people out of stress this year. One of the easiest way to do that is to get the book to the bestseller list, because that puts it on the shelves in front of people who would be passing by feeling very stressed, and they may actually find it as a result. If you intend to buy Unstressable at any point in time, please pre-order it instead of waiting for the book to be released. And when you pre-order, go to our website, unstressable.com, and register your pre-order receipt to come and join us for the pre-launch webinar on April 28th. With no further ado, I am dying to learn to breathe because, as I said, I suck at it. So, Stuart, thank you so much for being here with us.
It's such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Alice.
Yeah, I mean, I was about to say, you, Stuart, have got an amazing story. Like Mo said, this has all come from total tragedy. But before we even talk about that part, I'd like to know who Stuart was before you learned how to breathe at all. What kind of a life were you living at that point? Were you stressed?
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny saying that. The Stuart before I could breathe.
You could breathe, right? Yeah, I thought that the phrasing of that statement was quite interesting. Before you learned to breathe. I felt that is where I am. But
Well, it's interesting because I spent my life too busy to breathe. And I didn't really stop and think about this one thing that was keeping me alive, but not just keeping me alive, the thing that can help manage my mindset and my emotions and everything that life throws at you. Before learning to breathe and before finding breathing as a tool for all these things, I was touring the world as a DJ. So a very different lifestyle. Ooh. At that time, very creative and very busy, and I was having a whale of a time, to be honest. I was really thought everything was cool, but quite a destructive lifestyle as well. I was up late, lots of different time zones, fueling myself with food on the go and drinking too much and all those things. So that was beforehand. Before that, I actually worked in finance for a bit.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we have to be very curious about what's next, but we'll get to that.
And before that, I was very heavily involved in sport. So I've always been very active and very sporty on a judo mat at 4 years old. I was a black belt by 16 and left school to pursue that as a career. So I've jumped a little bit from
many
sport.
Lives.
Many lives, yeah. From sport, I left the sporting world because of an injury. I slipped a disc in my back, end up at university, end up in finance. And then music has been a trail through all of that. I've always had a big passion for music and waved goodbye to the corporate job and started touring as a DJ.
That's a very big risk, isn't it?
It is a big risk, but it was a calculated risk when I took that jump. I'd signed some record deals and I thought I'd take a year off. I think I'll take a year off.
From finance.
From finance.
You never go back.
And yeah, and I never went back.
Exactly. Yeah. Suddenly you go like, ooh, this is not life.
Yeah. And exactly that happened. So yeah, I have felt like I've lived many lives. But the interesting thing is, through all those lives, through sport, through corporate lifestyle, through a very creative life, no one ever taught me to breathe. No one taught me to breathe when I was high-level sport. I never even thought about it. No one taught me to breathe when I was stressed out working in the city. And no one taught me to breathe when I was jumping time zones or trying to come up with new music or be creative. It wasn't until, like you said, more of a tragedy happened that forced me to look inwards. And that was grief, which you guys know very well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, that was just, you know, I know that tale, but for those that are listening, would you be able to, say how you, came into breathwork?
Yeah, well, I came to breathwork through grief. It was, my girlfriend was diagnosed with terminal cancer. So that was when I was DJing and touring. So it put the brakes on what I was doing. And in many ways, made me look at the body, mind and spirit already when she was going through cancer, forced me to kind of look, what are we putting in our bodies? What's happening with our mindset and what happens when we're no longer here? So these quite loaded questions. And sadly, she didn't make it. She passed away. And
How long did it take?
It took about 18 months. So it was relatively rapid. And again, nobody told me about breathing at that time. And I probably wouldn't have listened. I think if someone just says, oh, you should just breathe, or if you go off and do some breathing, it's going to cure your cancer. And my eyes would have rolled and said, this is ridiculous. Speak some sense. And it wasn't till she passed and I was in a pretty bad headspace. And it was Mother's Day. She passed on Valentine's Day, which is another sickener. So she passed on Valentine's Day, and then Mother's Day was like the month later, and I'd moved back to Scotland, where I'm from. My mum and dad had been amazing, and something popped up online for Mother's Day saying breathing workshop. And my mum is into yoga, and that's as far as I thought about it. And I thought, my mum will love this. So I went along with her to this breathing session, and that's when the light bulb switched on for me. I realized, well, I had a very powerful experience, quite a out-of-body experience, both very cathartic. I felt a lot of emotion surge, a lot of physical energy in my body, but I felt like my girlfriend was there holding my hand.
I know.
And that was the powerful thing. It was so powerful because I thought, either I'm going mad, either someone spiked my drink before going into this breathing session, or the final thing was, maybe I've overlooked something called breathing my whole life, and it had the ability to change my mindset and move me into a space that's beyond this physical realm. So I wanted more. That was my, I thought, was this a one-off?
I know that feeling so well. So it's quite interesting. You're talking about, I don't know what they call it, shamanic breathing. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was epileptic when I was young. And my diagnosis was that when I over-oxygenated my blood, I would get a fit, I would get an attack. And so I always, probably the reason why I breathe so badly is I've always trained myself to sort of underventilate, if you want.
Yeah.
And then for the first time in my life, right after I left Google, I decided, you know what, for the first time ever, I'm going to be adventurous. I'm just going to do whatever the F I want. I went and lived in the Dominican Republic and, had a wonderful experience there. And, a wonderful woman came into my life. And, somehow someone showed up and said, okay, we're doing breathing sessions. I was like, yep, let's do that too. I'm going for a, psychedelic experience or whatever. And oh my God, it flipped my life upside down. It's so interesting. And every time I had one of those, first of all, I had a very deep appreciation for the teacher that was there. I don't know if you call her a teacher, to the point that I kept thanking her for around 2 or 3 days afterwards, texting her and saying, this is incredible, right?
Yeah.
And then every time I went 3 times in my life. This tells you how bad I am at following through, right? but every time I went, the minute the session ended, I was like, I'm going to do this every week.
Yeah.
This has to be every week. This is life-changing and never followed through. But I can easily relate to when you say it's life-changing. It's a bit of psychedelics, a bit of spirituality, a bit of dying and coming back, a bit of living,
yeah,
all combined. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's interesting that you, because it's often told to avoid, if you're epileptic, to do enhanced ventilation techniques like shamanic breathing or your holotropic breath work or any of these vaster connected breaths, because it can create the onset of a fit.
Exactly. Yeah. I, at that time, I was basically so adventurous. I said, so what? What's a fit? Like, you know, I've had many of those. I mean, interestingly, I had completely healed my own epilepsy by learning to breathe. But to breathe the opposite way.
Yeah.
Right. So basically, once they told me it was hyperventilation that got me there, I was like, okay, you know, like meditating on anything in life, I can meditate to slow down my breathing when I feel an attack coming. Right. Yeah. And it is somehow quite interesting. Both would show you the impact of breathing. Right.
Yeah.
So whatever you do with your breathing can actually define what your health, what your mindset, what your spiritual connection is like. Tell me about her holding your hand. Did she say anything?
She said that she did. She said when she was holding my hand, she said, like, it's okay, I'm fine. But she also said, and this is what we've been looking for.
And this is what
we're looking
breathing.
For. Yeah.
Oh.
When she was very sick, we were searching for a cure the whole time. We were looking for something that would help. I mean, it was terminal, but we were traveling a lot from different cities and all sorts of places to find some sort of treatment. And yeah, that's what came through. And since then, it's just been all doors open towards breathing for me. I thought it was maybe wanted to check, is it a one-off? So I went and did some more breath work. And then it started to make me think, well, this is one application of breathing. What other ways can we breathe and how can we use our breath for different ailments or different ways? So that's what she said in that first session. And it wasn't just the single time. I would go back and I felt closer to her when I do these breath sessions than I did in my waking everyday conscious experience.
Of course.
So that's where I felt very connected to the practice. It allowed me, like you said, pulled in everything. It felt very spiritual for me and very beyond our everyday living. I felt like I could plug into something bigger than myself.
Can we exchange a few notes on this? So what do you think actually happens? Let's take the health benefits we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
But I've had Ali tell me things in those three breath sessions, breath work sessions, that were life-changing. And I specifically the third one, where, you know, normally it takes you a little bit of time to get to that state. On the third time I did this, it literally took like 7 minutes. And the instructor was a friend, so, you know, he worried because like 10 minutes later I got up and I was so fresh and everything was fine. And he was like, anything's wrong? And I was like, no, we're done, right? Yeah. But literally 7 minutes in, I saw Ali in his funny way, literally sitting on my chest and saying, Papa, this is very stupid. The answer is A, B, and C, right? Yeah. And it was actually the answer, right? So what happens? How does that happen? Are we hallucinating?
Yeah, it's... The research is a bit patchy, which is what I've been, because it is hard to figure out. There's been a couple of papers, actually. There was a paper in December that just came out looking into this, looking into hyperventilation or increased ventilation for this purpose. But what I've found, I know you said oxygenating your body, it's actually the opposite. The oxygen levels don't change. Carbon dioxide drops. So carbon dioxide drops quite rapidly. So you go into a respiratory alkalosis, which we usually would say don't go into because that is where we have panic attacks, etc. But in this case, so carbon dioxide drops in the body and we need a balance of carbon dioxide and oxygen. So we need carbon dioxide present in the cell for it to switch places with oxygen. We need carbon dioxide for the offset. So what actually happens when you do this style of breathing is we drop carbon dioxide deliberately and it tricks our brain. We actually deoxygenate the cells. We might be breathing more, but we're actually dropping oxygen.
Interesting.
And there's different theories behind what that is. What causes, does it cause the brain to go into, shut down its default mode network, in essence, because we've stimulated so much that carbon oxide dropped and it says, right, okay, well, this isn't safe, and we shut down. So we have this near-death experience that's happening.
I was going to say that.
And in that moment, we have this transcendent experience and we're no longer here for that moment, and we get what we need and we come back to the body. So we have this rebirth experience, this dying and coming back, which is why it's some of the therapeutic applications for it is for working through birth traumas and things like that as well, because we come back into our body. And I mean, this is all speculation. There is some research that suggests as well that we release DMT in the brain during these experiences, because of, like we would in low oxygen environments, because oxygen levels actually drop in the brain, that can cause us to have this transcendent experience.
It is amazing though, because actually the only proper like intense breath work session I've done was with you at one of your workshops years ago, and I saw my sister who'd passed away at the time and some other things, and then I also had those hilarious chicken hands, as you call them. So like, why does that happen? Because it's like, that's the lack of
that's just because carbon dioxide dropped in the body. So we basically, our hands will cramp up. I try to avoid that with patients or clients as much as possible, because it can trigger more stress and more trauma. And it's quite a very uncomfortable. It can be excruciatingly painful.
I was just enjoying the ride of what was going on in my head.
Which is great. It's just great. And
Is there a way to avoid it? I mean, it's one of the reasons I get scared of those sessions. It's a bit of a reminder of that sort of being unable to move when you have an epileptic attack.
Yeah. What I've found through sessions is that happens when we have the forced exhale. Okay. So when, now some practices, shamanic breathwork, is quite heavy and forced. The way I teach that, I mean, I teach all styles of breathwork. We're talking about one.
We'll go to all of them.
We're talking about this one application, which is around release and releasing trauma and having emotional integration that can be very, very potent and helping through different challenges in our life. But what happens, that cramping happens when carbon dioxide drops too rapidly.
Too rapidly.
Now we can gently allow it to happen, and it happens with the exhale. So the inhale, we're breathing in, it's coming in. The exhale, if somebody's forcing it, it pushes it too fast. So what I've found in my practice is if we actually have that exhale is complete surrender, the exhale becomes the meditation, because every time we exhale, we drop into complete surrender. So we're balancing the doing as we breathe in, we're breathing in, the out breath just becomes like gravity dropping to the floor. Now what I'll find is people that get tetany, that's the word for the chicken hands, are usually those that are forcing the exhale. So they're going, and there's a fine line, or they're controlling their exhale. Now if we can find that sweet spot in between control and force, where the exhale just drops out, we find this really nice balance, and this balance between the doing and the being. So our meditation happens every out breath, and it's a much gentler process to get to where we need to go.
When is your next session?
We do lots of sessions. We're doing online sessions now as well.
Do you?
Yeah, which are amazing too. It's funny, before the whole COVID pandemic, I never thought I could apply this online, because a lot of what I do is hands-on too.
Yeah, I mean,
like release tension from the diaphragm, get the breathing muscles. Why is somebody's breathing? You said yourself, you're breathing badly, but why is somebody breathing badly? And that breathing badly is habitual, because we're breathing so many times a day, 20,000 times a day. So what's happening in the actual physical movement of the breath, and why is our brain holding on to those muscles? Or why are we over recruiting other muscles? And a lot of this can be habitual, posture and clothing and lots of things. But a lot of it comes down to emotions. And a lot of it comes down to our experiences that we have, because our breath maps our human experience. It brings in the right energy and flow for whatever we're experiencing to give us the demand for energy in that moment.
Teach me, Master Stewart.
Well, breathing is really, it's really simple. Okay. It is really simple. It's about energy. It's about putting fuel in the body. And in the process, you have the exhaust coming out, which is carbon dioxide, which is a bit more than just waste.
Yeah.
As I explained, you need this balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide. But generally speaking, it's about energy. So if we need to run for the bus, or if we're running late for a podcast, then we need to run in the door.
Yeah, for everyone, I showed up 14 minutes late. Yes, go ahead. Yes.
But what happens is we move a bit faster, so our breathing changes. Because the demand for energy is increased.
Correct.
So that's very simple. Now, this happens consciously or unconsciously, because one of our mind's main things is to keep us safe, which is where the whole stress process comes in. Our fight or flight response kicks in any moment, because the mind says, there's a threat. We need to get enough energy to either fight it off or leg it. Our fight or flight response, our sympathetic drive. Unless we freeze in that moment, which is the sort of even more intense response, which is parasympathetic again. But so breathing is really dependent on what's happening around us and also what's happening in our minds. Because our mind doesn't know the difference. The unconscious mind that's driving our breath doesn't know the difference between what's happening around us, what's happening internally. So our breathing then becomes a cue to our environment internally and externally. Which is amazing, because we can start playing with our breath. So we can use our breath to change
the environment.
The environment, change how we feel, change our energy levels, calm ourselves down. All these amazing things that we can do with our breath through breath control. Where I find breathing and breath gets really exciting is, well, unconsciously, we're trying to control our environment by controlling our breath unconsciously. So we're holding our breath, we're creating restriction in our breathing cycles to stop ourselves from feeling or having an emotional outburst. So if we are feeling really angry and something's pissed us off and we realize, well, it's not appropriate to shout and scream, we contract our breathing muscles to stop the flow of anger.
Whoa.
If we are feeling really upset and you're at work and you're busy and you get some bad news and you don't want to burst into tears in front of your colleagues, you hold your breath, you constrict your breathing muscles to stop that natural flow of emotion. It's the same with the good stuff. So if we shouldn't find something funny and you're trying to hold yourself back from laughing, we hold our breath to stop the laughter. So breathing is a really important part of this emotional integration. As we feel and we have an emotional experience, our breath moves to
enable it.
To enable that integration, and then we have some sort of reaction or outburst. If we deem it not appropriate to feel, we hold our breath. If our unconscious mind, which goes one level deeper, because of our belief system, says it's not appropriate to feel this, our breathing shuts down without us even consciously interacting with it. So you find that people will be stuck in certain breathing archetypes because of the experiences that they've had through childhood or through their past, peak experiences, griefs, traumas, their breathing changes as a result.
Do you think then, because a lot of people today, a lot of breathwork specialists, and I don't know if you say this, like we all breathe wrong. It's like what the general consensus is, and as a society, we're not breathing correctly. And do you think that that's because as a society, a lot of the time we're emotionally repressed and we're only just starting to come to connect to how to process our feelings and actually be connected to that part of ourselves?
It's a huge part of it. And it's interesting because we're all breathing wrong, but our unconscious mind is only doing what it's been told. So it's saying, oh, no, we don't do this right now. This is the way we breathe. And then because the physical body gets in tow with that as well. So let's say you have an experience where the example I often share with people. So if a tiger came in the room, simple stress response, tiger comes in, we see the tiger, we hear the roar, our brain sends a signal to our breath moves and we leg it or we fight it off. Simple fight or flight response. If a dog comes in the room, okay, people in the room will have a different response. Some will run towards the dog and experience love and joy and happiness.
More will run away.
Okay, yeah. Great. Perfect.
And I know exactly why.
Why would you run away from the
dog? Because
when
I was 8 or 9 years old, I was attacked by a very vicious dog in darkness at a very late time, with knowing that the owner was around 50 meters away. And so, yeah, I love them. I really do. Like, I really love dogs, but can they please stay away?
I mean, it's a perfect example.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've had an experience where you've had a vicious attack and you've felt that and your brain's fired and wired, create a pathway and a belief dogs are not safe. Let's keep them at arm's length.
Yeah.
Keep the dogs away.
And also keep the saliva, to be honest. But yeah, that's another thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe compared to Alice, the dog comes in the room and Alice's breath expands and opens.
Mm. Yeah.
She feels elation with positive emotion. Our breathing opens. For yourself, fear kicks in, your breathing shuts down. So your brain, before even consciously being aware, triggers the response to your breathing because of the experience that you've had.
Of course. Yeah.
So that's where I find it quite interesting when we say, are all people breathing badly or incorrectly? Well, we all have experiences in our life that will impact the way we breathe.
Mm.
So our mind and body is doing the best it can with what it has, the information that it has in the present moment. Now, the present moment information is the bag of bricks that we're carrying around from our past, all our experiences, all our vicious attacks, all our dog barks and bites, and then everything else that's happening in the moment, and then also our forward projections. And it's all shown in the way that we breathe, which I just find fascinating. So you can start to see our breath as a real snapshot of what is happening for somebody in the present right now,
based on all of their baggage,
based on all their past. And I find it fascinating because when someone sits and breathes in front of me or lies down and breathes, before they even tell me what's going on for them, I'm like, oh, well, this is going on for you.
Damn.
And
I'm exposed.
Well, it is. All of a sudden, the veil is lifted because our breath doesn't lie. It tells us the story. Someone says, oh, I'm really calm. And you're like, well, actually, you're not so calm because your breathing's saying otherwise.
Mm.
And I think, well, we intuitively do that anyway. We're always reading cues from environment, from people. And if I sat down here and went,
yeah, but is Stuart okay?
Yeah, is Stuart okay? Or did he run here as well? Like, yeah. So you start to create, and maybe we match their breathing as a form of empathy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can tell a lot about somebody by the way they breathe. And in Breathe In, Breathe Out, I go into these various archetypes. Our breathing is as unique as our fingerprint.
Mm.
As unique as our fingerprint, because all of our experiences are unique. Mm. So when we get to the real, like, we have similar patterns and archetypes, but everyone's breathing is slightly different. And there's other things that will keep us trapped in certain breathing patterns, and that might be stress. Mm. If we're stressed, well, what happens? We start to hyperventilate. We breathe faster, or we have periods of holding our breath and not breathing. Then we take gasps of air.
Mm.
So our breathing becomes very irregular.
Yeah.
And let's say we're breathing too fast because we're stressed, we're breathing in our chest because our brain thinks the to-do list or the should-do list is the tiger in the room. And our fast breathing drops our carbon dioxide. And our body doesn't like prolonged change in its pH. So if we're stressed over a period of time and carbon dioxide drops, and we like to have that range of 7.35 to 7.45 in terms of pH. But if carbon dioxide drops, pH changes, we're too alkaline. So the body holds on to acidity instead of peeing it out.
So you're inflamed.
So you become more inflamed. Your organs have more acidity. You become more inflamed because it prioritizes pH over breathing, rhythm.
No
way. So now you get trapped. You get trapped in a fast rate of breathing because our trigger to breathe is carbon dioxide increase. So when carbon dioxide increases, our brain says, take a breath.
Mm.
So if we've got this fast rate of breathing because we're stressed and it lasts more than 20 minutes, it lasts a couple of days, a week, a year, however many years, then our breathing gets trapped in this fast rhythm.
And shallower, probably.
Shallower as a result. So the body compensates its pH and then we get stuck in that because the new range in pH changes. Because our body's natural baseline is different. So you'll find that people are stuck in these ways of breathing, maybe because of an experience that's been stressful where they've held their breath and they've held on, or maybe because of habitual stress happening day in, day out. And, or then it can be things like posture, injury or illness as well that will change our breathing patterns.
You talked about archetypes. So for those listening, how many archetypes are there? And is there a particular one that we want to try and be? Or is there like...
You don't want to be like me.
I don't know what you want to be.
Whatever my archetype is.
Yeah, well, there is, because everyone's breathing is unique, there's probably there's infinite amount of styles of breathing, but in general terms, five archetypes. So you got chest breather, so chest dominant breather, stressful archetype. You have a frozen breather, and you'll see even in posture in people where the frozen breath is like this, and we're collapsed the lungs. We have reverse breather. Reverse breather, instead of engaging the diaphragm on the in-breath, the diaphragm goes out on the in-breath, and that can be, it tells the brain becomes confused. So those individuals will have certain characteristic traits, maybe a little bit clumsy, or they're not very good at coordination or coordinated sports. So what was that?
Three.
So we got chest breather, we got the reverse breather, we got the frozen breather, and we've got the perfect breather, which is the end one. Mm-hmm. There's one just slipped my mind right now.
Four out of five, and for the fifth people need to read the book.
Yeah, exactly, by the book to read. What's the perfect breather then?
The perfect breather is somebody who engaged. Oh, that was it. It's come back to me. I knew it would come back, which is an interesting one. And I can't believe I forgot there for a second. The fourth archetype is the controlled breath, the controller. And this is what I was, because I would have thought I was a perfect breather before I went to do that breathwork class, and before I started looking at my own breathing. I'd done sports all my life. My diaphragm was engaged. I felt like I could move my breath wherever I wanted to move. But the controlled breather is often the yogi, actually, believe it or not. A lot of yoga instructor, people that practice yoga, get so good at breath control because it makes their life feel under control. So as you know, through meditation, if you control your breath, well, everything becomes calm and control. But if this becomes a habitual controlling pattern, then we try and control everything in our life, and we find it very hard to let go of control. So we find it hard to trust.
It's so interesting.
Yeah. So the controller pattern was myself. I was very good at controlling my breath, but I wasn't able to let go. And the letting go comes down to this out breath. There's times we can control our breath to make us feel calm or to make us change our state. But are we allowing our out-breath also just to drop away, to completely surrender to the nature of the universe around us? Can we just allow that to happen? So the perfect breather is somebody that is using the diaphragm to breathe. We have a natural relaxed exhale. The rhythm and rate is much slower. So you were doing exactly what you were doing for your epilepsy. We want to slow our breath right the way down. The research says that 5.5 breaths per minute, which is very slow, because most people breathe about 13 breaths.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's not possible to keep on doing it that way. But the opposite happens to the stress breath when we slow our breath down.
So interesting.
When we start to slow our breath down that you practiced, Mo, when we start to slow our breath down, the first thing is that will happen is we'll start to feel a bit of air hunger. We'll feel this desire to breathe more because carbon dioxide's increased. So we've gone the other way from hyperventilation. Carbon dioxide's now increased in the body. It's elevated. And that's the first trigger for the brain to breathe. So as we slow our breath down, it starts to feel uncomfortable. We feel like we're suffocating. Yeah. We're not getting enough air. We feel breathless. But it's the opposite. We've actually just got too much carbon dioxide. Now, when we practice this daily, when we practice slowing our breath down, using different slow rates of breathing, of rhythms, the body does something different. It says, wait a second, I'm too acidic. What am I going to do about this? How can I fix my pH again? We're too acidic. So what it does is it starts to create more red blood cells. It starts to increase EPO in the bone marrow, erythropoietin, which is famous for the wrong reasons, because Lance Armstrong was injecting this stuff.
I remember that.
Yeah. But what in essence happens is we have more red blood cells. So in one breath, we get more output. We absorb more. So our breathing becomes much more economic. So we can take less breaths, more economic.
Yeah.
We can take less breaths and get the same energy output from doing so. And we feel calmer in the same process because we're not breathing fast. We're not triggering the stress response.
I love when we talk about the human machine as a machine. I love that. This is so
fascinating.
This makes so much sense.
It's quite simple, the machine of the body, in this sense. But it's fascinating, and it's fascinating that we don't get taught this at school.
Yeah, so actually, this is one of the more interesting sides of this. I think I understand that the archetypes, I'm probably that controlled one. The yogi description, I'm not a yogi, but I'm definitely very thoughtful about how everything works, right? But I also believe I'm a junk breather. You know how you get those moments in life where there is so much going on, so you end up eating junk food?
Yeah.
Right? You just tell yourself, it's fine. I will look at this when it's a little slower, right? Now is not the time to focus on healthy, right? And it's quite interesting how I think many of us are probably like that. It's that we don't give breath our priority. Mm. It's like there are so many other things happening now. Let me just focus on what's going on. First of all, how much of priority should it deserve, right? I think you probably are going to set this very high. but what can I do? Is there a way where I make it second nature, not a deliberate priority? Is how do I get to I eat healthy, right? Now this is a big priority in my life, especially after reading Alice's chapter on physical stress in this book.
Why do you eat healthy?
Believe it or not, multiple layers, right? One is, of course, the stoic view of doing the right thing, right? But underneath that, you really, for all of our listeners, cut sugar from your diet. Pains, aches, sluggishness goes away in a way that completely trumps the joy you get from a cookie. So you tell yourself, I enjoy a cookie. And yes, you may actually with a cup of coffee, and the joy lasts 6 minutes, right? The joy of spending the rest of the day without pains and aches that result from the sugar and the inflammation is just outstanding, right? So you know that for a fact. And third is honestly because with more stress, you actually want to reduce the external stressors that come into your life. So if I really want to perform and deliver on what I'm attempting to give in my lifetime, I need to be at my best shape, right? And even though I still enjoy a cookie with my coffee, I realize that there is more joy and there is more duty, if you want, to be a higher performer, right?
Yeah, and the reason I asked is it's exactly the same with your breath, if not more so. Mm. Our cells need glucose and they need oxygen. And if it's a driver for our energy levels, if it's a driver for switching us on and switching us off when we need, it's also a driver for our performance. I work with a lot of athletes that want to go that extra round or extra mile. And this is all down to breathing. Why would you not be able to perform at your best? You become tired. You've got lactic buildup in your muscles, or you haven't slept the night before because you've been so stressed. You're not maybe digesting your food. Well, if you're feeling stressed and you're even if you're eating the healthiest foods. So if you are sat breathing chest breath, which is quite common. If you're chest breathing and it's a stressful pattern, in essence, you're sending the signal from your body to your brain that the tiger's in the room. You're sending a signal, the alarm bell's going off. The alarm bell's going off. You've got sympathetic drive happening. You've normalized it in your brain because it's become normal.
It's like there's always a tiger.
There's always a tiger. But your body's still sending the alarm. Mm. So if there's a tiger in the room, we do not prioritize our digestion. We say, well, that can wait. Mm. Our reproductive organs, the same. So we say, well, actually, there's a tiger in the room right now. We've got to fight or flight. We've got to run. So even if you are eating the healthiest diet, you've got everything in, you've to a T for your body type, you've got all your nutrients and macros and everything all planned. If you are still breathing badly, you're still sending a signal of stress and you're not getting the majority of goodness from the food that you're eating. Mm. So it's really, the first thing is to actually breathe. Make sure your breath is the priority. Am I breathing at rest? That's where we were talking before the podcast. Yeah. Is my breathing at rest the perfect breather? So am I using my nose to breathe in and out? Am I using my diaphragm? Is it open? Is it flowing? Is it relaxed? Is the rate nice and slow and gentle? Then we can start looking at other parts of our day. So if you're breathing at rest, you fix it. You might realize in that moment at breathing at rest that you are a controller archetype. Mm-hmm. Well, why am I a controller? What is causing me to control my situation? Is it an experience from my past that's not been integrated and it's forced me to hold things in place? So using myself as an example, what I came to realize was The grief was one part, of course, to my breathwork journey. But the reason I wasn't allowing myself to feel grief was actually the dog bark and bite for me was Big Boys Don't Cry. So the program that I had was Big Boys Don't Cry. Done judo, martial arts my whole life, teddy bear called Tough Ted. you can see, grew up in Scotland and created this persona in my mind that when something happens, you don't show that emotion. That's not possible.
Wow.
So we can see that when somebody breathes, we have all the baggage from before and we have the present moment, whatever's happening. So we really want to uncover, am I breathing at rest as best as I possibly can? And then start looking. I usually look at different areas throughout our day. If I'm breathing at rest, fine, great. Then now, how am I breathing throughout my day? What's my usual day look like? Is it changing? Is my work very stressful? What else am I doing through the day? Are there certain moments that the tiger's in the room? I mean, talk about being unstressable. Stress is unavoidable, but it's how do we manage ourselves through that? What happens to my breath? Can I use my breath in those moments as a tool to regulate my nervous system, calm myself down when need be? The next thing I look at is breathing and speaking. We do a lot of that throughout our day. Majority of people, you might find that a lot of people will be, let's say, a sales job.
It's my whole life.
So you're talking, and you're gasping for air through your mouth.
Yeah.
So that gasp for air through the mouth, every breath, so you're talking, you're taking a gasp. Instantly, you've taken a gasp. You sent an alarm bell again. You said, oh, that gasp of air is the same gasp if you left the studio today and walked onto the road and the car was coming towards you. We take a gasp of air. There's that moment of stress to alert your body to jump back to safety.
Come on, Stuart. Like, you want me to change my career, my diet?
Yeah, just your breathing.
Exactly.
Keep the career, diet sounding good. We just need to change your breathing.
How do you breathe when you talk then?
You want to try and breathe through your nose in between sentences as much as possible.
That's so confusing.
Stuart, so it's, yeah, so you speak.
Hello, everyone knows. No, that doesn't work.
I've watched you and you do it now and then.
Is that true?
That's true. I've been watching.
Are you saying I'm not horrible?
You're not terrible at breathing.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that true?
I have to say.
Now you're gasping through the mouth.
Now I'm
really
shocked. So
you can see
shocked.
That you're feeling shocked. So your breathing changes. You're thinking and your breathing starts to
So relate. I'm usually very, very, very calm. That's my resting state. And it's most of my life, right? Most of my day. Like if I'm awake for 18 hours, I'll be calm for 17 and 40 minutes, right? The thing, however, is I have to say, the comment you said, the question you asked about why do you eat healthy, I think that's the shocker for me. It's like, why do I not breathe healthy?
Yeah.
Why am I not putting it at the center? Because also mathematically, by the way, I eat twice a day, never three times.
Mm.
And I breathe
20,000 times.
Thousands of times,
yeah.
Right? And if you just can add a tiny bit of progress on one of those and repeat it 20,000 times, it's mathematically, that's the winner, really.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. So if you can fix your breathing and speaking, which periodically I've clocked you doing it correctly, understanding where your breath is flowing, then the next place is sleep. How are you breathing when you fall asleep? A lot of people stop breathing when they sleep. They have sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
Their breathing changes. Your breathing changes anyway when you sleep. But are you having the best possible sleep because of your breathing? Or are you going to sleep? Or are you not going to sleep because the tiger's in the room? The stressful breath is triggering the response. And then we also have, which is also what we talked about before, how you then breathing. If you've got all that down, breathing at rest, breathing and speaking, breathing throughout your day, breathing when you sleep, then you can start looking at breathing and exercise. Because then you're increasing our respiratory rate, you're needing more input, you've got more carbon dioxide building up. So how are you breathing in that moment? Every sport is slightly different.
Yeah.
Because weightlifting would be different and swimming, obviously you're in the water. There's slight anomalies with different practices, but they're the key areas which covers most of our life in terms of breathing.
Can we ask about the sleep thing? Because sleep's such a big topic. You know, when we're stressed, we tend to sleep badly for emotional reasons, mental reasons, breathing reasons, obviously as well. So how would you advise people to breathe to get into a good sleep, for example? And what happens? Would you also say to tape your mouth? Because you hear about this a lot, like saying tape your mouth at night to breathe through your nose. So why do people say that? And would you advise that as well?
Yeah, it's great. There's two aspects to that. So there's getting to sleep and then there's good quality of sleep. Now, getting to sleep from a breathing perspective, you want to calm your nervous system.
Yeah.
You want to move into your parasympathetic state so you can do certain exercises. A long out breath slows the heart rate down, drops blood pressure, tells the brain that we're safe. So that's why the 4-7-8 breath is often talked about, Dr. Wheel. Mm-hmm. Breathing in for 4, holding for 7, out for 8, induces a parasympathetic state. Something like that is really helpful to do before you sleep. Repeating it 3 or 4 minutes before you sleep, telling your body you're okay and you nod off.
Works magic.
Works like magic, yes. Yeah. So that's getting to sleep. When you're asleep, depending on how you're breathing, a lot of people breathe through their mouth when they sleep.
Mm.
And the research shows that you're much higher chance of having sleep apnea when you breathe through the mouth.
Is that why people snore?
That's also in the majority of snoring as well.
I don't snore, so maybe I breathe through my nose when I sleep.
Yeah, well, the quickest way to check is tape your mouth up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And the reason there's been a movement towards taping the mouth up is it's a simple, quick intervention that costs all of a couple of pounds to get medical micropore tape, place it on your mouth, and force your nose to breathe for those 7 or 8 hours as you're sleeping, which is such an important thing that we are breathing through the nose as we sleep.
Where's my phone? Order tape.
Yeah, so it's really, really important that we breathe through the nose when we sleep. And that is just a simple intervention that will allow us to force the nose to breathe. Some people do have deviated septums or do have structural reasons that they can't, or even allergies that will force the nose to be clogged up. So, I mean, it's different for everybody, but generally speaking, I do get people to breathe through the nose by using mouth tape when they sleep at night.
Do you find people are more energized then when they wake up for doing that?
Much deeper quality of sleep.
Is there a specific higher value for nose breathing than mouth breathing?
Yeah, the mouth breath creates stress in the body. It's a stress. The nose creates resistance. It slows the rate at which you breathe. It also filters the air. So the nose is designed to filter the air before it arrives at your lungs, flushes it with nitric oxide. And also when we breathe through our mouth, the position of the tongue, if you're sleeping, the body relaxes and the tongue drops back, which is where sleep apnea happens. So the tongue drops back into the throat and obstructs the airway. Mm. So they were breathing through the mouth, maybe snoring, obstruct the airway, stop breathing because they can't breathe, and then they wake up.
Yeah.
So you'll find that people who are mouth breathing when they sleep just don't get that deep sleep. They don't get the quality of sleep that they need for full recovery.
That's fascinating, isn't it? You think just breathing is like such a gift to be able to do it correctly. So if I'm listening to this and I'm super stressed, listening to this podcast thinking I'm not breathing correctly at all, what would you say to someone who's listening as like their first breathing exercise to try?
Yeah. First thing would be just close your mouth and breathe through your nose.
Shut your mouth.
Shut your mouth and breathe through your nose. Simple as it sounds, you might notice straight away that, oh, well, maybe my nose is blocked. You might start to feel that air hunger that I talked about. It might even, for some people who are very stressed, breathing through the nose slowly then can make them feel a bit anxious because they think, I'm not getting enough air. But if we just sit in with that and think we've got all 100%. The air we need, I've got all the air in every breath, I've got what I need, then over time our carbon dioxide levels, because of the change in pH, will start to balance out.
My personal experience on nose breathing, because of the aeroplanes, you know, I travel a lot and the air is very dry, so my sinuses start to hurt and then, you know, they get a little blocked and annoying and I get that headache.
Yeah.
And in the past, I used to do everything like sprays and, you know, painkillers and whatever you want, right? Nose breathing. The first few breaths hurt, you know, it's almost like that your sinuses are just, you know, not happy with this. And then you just continue to nose breathe. It just changes everything. It clears up. You feel the headache goes away.
Yeah.
You feel more energized. You yawn a few times first because your body was like, oxygen, thank you. Yeah, I can do that, right? And then it's incredible, really. Yeah,
really, exactly that. So that would be my first protocol, is get people to
breathe. Can I add a bit? I'm really sorry here.
Yeah.
But there was something around libido and men, you know, for men that nose breathing, I don't know exactly what it was. I think it was nitrous, because you said nitrous oxide.
The nitric oxide, yes.
Yeah, yeah, can you talk about that as
well? Yeah, so nitric oxide is released in the navel cavity. Mm-hmm. So nitric oxide is a gas, kills off airborne bacteria, but it's also linked to libido. It opens up the blood vessels, so it increases circulation. Mm. It's actually the main component in Viagra.
Is it?
Yes.
There you go.
So
yeah,
that's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So and so, if you hum, so an exercise, breathing in and just humming,
on the exhale.
On the exhale, mm-hmm. the vibration that's happening in the nose through the humming sound increases release, so we get 15 times more. Research says 15 times more nitric oxide through the humming. So
count the number of people that will be humming tonight.
You see people humming through the streets.
I think the success of this podcast will be measured in humming.
Yeah. Yeah. So the natural Viagra is just a hum away.
So I had a friend who was discussing this, and it truly actually worked for him. Yep. So it really does change something when you breathe through your nose. You just vitality wise, it makes you very different.
Yeah, hugely.
Especially if you're living a stressful lifestyle. So for me, again, you know, I sleep better, but I feel more energized at the same time just through that nasal breathing.
Yeah. And that's why the mouth tape at night is good as well. Because when you practice mouth taping at night, it forces your body to get used to using its nose. So in the morning, you'll find that you'll just naturally be breathing a bit more through your nose. That's why I think it's such a simple intervention. But with something like night mouth taping, don't just jump into doing it tonight if you're listening. Just put some tape on for 5 minutes, see how you feel. Put some tape on for, build it up, 5, 10, 15, 20, until you can do about 25 minutes with the tape on during the day, and then you'll be fine for nighttime.
Interesting.
It's amazing, yeah. though. I mean, you're obviously like, you're the extreme of being able to breathe well, because it's your life. It's like, you know, your career. So you obviously at the beginning weren't. You're a normal person now. You know, you're a normal person breathing badly and et cetera. So what do you think has been the biggest like self exploration and shift you found from this like journey of breathing from start to finish for you?
Yeah. I mean, the big shift for me was what we talked about at the beginning. I always thought I was an okay breather. And I think if anybody saw me breathe,
they would think you're a great breather.
Yeah. I was using my diaphragm, using my nose.
I have to say, this whole idea of you monitoring people breathing is a little creepy, right? It's like everyone should be aware when they're around you that you're looking like, how is she breathing? Do you do that on first dates and stuff?
It's an important thing, actually. Yeah. But we can change.
We can
change our breath.
Yeah.
That's the positive thing. It's not stuck.
Yeah. So, sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying that you were normally...
My biggest thing was... And what I find so fascinating, we've talked about slowing our breath and perfect breathing, but how our perfect breathing is really impacted by our past and through our experience, through our beliefs that are causing our brain to trigger a certain way and our breath to trigger in that moment. And that for me is really, really fascinating. And my journey into breath work was that space, moving into vulnerability and allowing myself to feel and feel more all of a sudden, more of life by releasing the tension that was held in my breath and then giving my brain the signal to say, it's actually okay. It's okay to feel. It's okay to be emotional. We have life. Life is beautiful with emotions. And once we allow our emotions to flow through our breath, then we don't have to constrict our breathing to stop ourselves from feeling. And for me, that's been the biggest thing, because we'll see a lot of people, you see people walking down the street or on the underground tube or on the aeroplane, and people, you can see people just constricted in their posture.
You're creepy again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm creeping around looking at everyone's breathing. And you just feel like, well, actually, they could just open their breath. And once we open our breath, when our breath is free to open, I shared you seeing the dog and being excited.
Yeah.
It's open, flowing, it's expansive. And with expansive breath, then we start to feel more joy and we start to feel more elation throughout our day.
I could never have expected that one of my most enjoyable conversations ever on this podcast could be about breath. Honestly, I have enjoyed this so much and I have learned so much. I one of the things I really enjoyed in you is when you said to hum. Because one of the pet peeves that I have is the whole idea of it actually is hum, right? There is, you know, I sometimes dislike the idea of positioning spirituality without science, right? Mm. And there is a lot of science to be found in the fact that, you know, you said basically the bone structure with humming just generates more nitric oxide. So that to me is quite an eye-opener. The idea, of course, of breathing as part of meditation, I always used to really get a little irritated when people say, oh, but it's because breathing is life. Yeah, I understand that, but, you know, there is a lot more to the practice from a scientific point of view. How do I learn? I mean, people, I'm saying openly, I'm reading this on the flight back. This is just going to change my life. But the idea of that correct breathing, you know, where does one learn that? Like, you know, how do you know that your diaphragm is, you know, is going well, doing well? How do you know that it's the right amount, the right speed, and so on?
Yeah, so learning to breathe with your diaphragm just comes with practice. It's pretty straightforward. When we breathe with our diaphragm, it contracts, it moves downwards, air and organs displace down, and our belly rises. Mm. So we often hear that term, the belly breath, or breathing with your belly. It's not particularly using your stomach muscles, it's just this displacement downwards. So it's something that we can practice and learn with a daily practice each day. Obviously, we've got the book there, and we've got courses online and things as well, but it is something we can learn quite quickly. What's interesting is majority of the body likes to find homeostasis, it likes to find balance. And our breathing, this is what I find fascinating as well. When we're born, our breathing is correct for majority of people, unless there's been some sort of issue like collapsed lungs or something at birth. But for majority of people, our breathing is correct. Mm. Our diaphragm's engaged. We're breathing through our nose. We're perfect breathers. It's from birth, as we go through life, that we start to become bad breathers.
Yes, exactly.
And we become bad breathers because of the experiences we're having, whether that's too much stress or we're habitually wrong, whether it's an impactful experience like grief or the dog bark or bite, where our breathing changes to keep us safe. So we'll find that our breathing, when we start to practice, moves back pretty quick. And it's trying to figure out, well, what's causing my breathing to be stuck in this archetype? What's causing my breathing? If I've identified within the book one of the archetypes, one of the five archetypes, well, how do I move myself to the perfect breather by using a diaphragm, using my nose more, slowing my rate much right down to be calmer and more reserve more energy?
I find it really interesting, that whole diaphragmatic part, because I always know that if I've been under a bit of stress, I'm doing some diaphragmatic breathing, it feels tighter because I haven't been using it properly, just going around as normal. Yeah. And then the more you do it, like you say, the more relaxed and easier it becomes again. So it's just like a working a muscle, really, isn't it?
It's exactly that. And it's working a muscle, but also working out the tension in the muscles around it. I often get people to come in, actually release tension in their diaphragm.
Yeah.
So coming into, if your diaphragm's completely collapsed or rigid or very controlled around the solar plexus, we can come in and we can breathe in. And if you're feeling a lot of tension there, it feels quite uncomfortable, breathe out. So you get in there. So we're just gripping underneath our rib cage. And when you breathe into your, and then breathe out.
I did my mouth breathe out.
I think I have a bit of a fat cover that's making this exercise.
So you can work your way all down and start to release your diaphragm that way as well. But it's something that just comes with practice. If it's still stuck, if it's still frozen in a certain way, or the breath is very controlled, then you might need some sort of release within the muscles as well, or something more dynamic like the increased ventilation practices. And there's lots of the shamanic breath work, holotropic breath work, transformational breath. There's lots of different schools doing this conscious connected breath work, which is really about releasing, telling the body it's safe to release whatever's going on in the mind. So there's all these different applications for how we're using our breath, but ultimately all of them are to get back to this natural resting breath.
Yeah.
That is back to our baby breath, slow, relaxed, diaphragmatic, in and out through our nose.
We always overcomplicate it.
Yeah,
exactly. Stuart, I'm now going to bestow upon you the title of sensei. From now on, I will address you as sensei. This has been fascinating. Honestly, it's so, and you truly radiate what you're talking about. And I think it is just really eye-opening. I am willing to commit. I will seek you online in a very hidden way in the corner somewhere. I'll be one of the students.
In a non-creepy way?
In a non-creepy way. I will read this.
You'll be humming in the background.
I will read this, breathe in, breathe out. And I actually would encourage everyone listening to read this as well. Very, very grateful. Any further questions, Alice?
No further questions. But yeah, it's always so great to teach you. And it was just so fascinating. I think it's so great for people to actually understand how powerful their breath is on that more intricate level. So
yeah,
unbelievable. And for all of you listening, I would like to thank you very much for the opportunity to get me to meet all my senseis. So this truly has been a conversation that I think has been transformative for me. So thanks for the opportunity for that. I really strongly recommend that you look at this. Stress and the work we're doing on Unstressable is also without benefit for me personally and Alice. And I think the journey that we're going on together with you is not that we are completely beyond stress ourselves. For me personally, I think physical stress has always been part of the things I need to focus on. Today, I've discovered a very big part of that. I encourage you also to focus on your own stress and try to become unstressable. As I said, if you want to help our mission to get to 1 million people every year and you plan to order Unstressable, please do pre-order it before the end of April. We are extremely grateful for your time and attention. Take a bit of time to breathe. Take a bit of time to slow down. We love you all for listening, and we will see you next time.